When I picked up Laura Vanderkam's I Know How She Does It, I was immediately struck by its refreshing premise. Instead of another doom and gloom narrative about the impossibility of having it all, Vanderkam offers something revolutionary, evidence that successful women are quietly creating full, balanced lives without the constant struggle we're led to expect. The book has developed a cult following among high-achieving professionals who reject the notion that career success must come at the expense of personal fulfillment. Vanderkam's research-based approach has earned her spots on major television programs and speaking engagements at Fortune 500 companies. Perhaps most telling is how often the book is passed between friends with a whispered, "This changed everything for me." In a world of work-life balance manifestos, this one stands apart by showing us what's actually possible rather than just telling us what should be. Life isn't lived in dramatic stories or epiphanies, yet we tend to define our experiences through isolated moments of crisis or triumph. The work-life balance literature particularly loves the recitation of dark moments. That snowstorm when you were stranded at work while your child waited with a sitter, or the midnight emergency call that came during your business trip. These narratives reinforce the belief that combining career and family inevitably leads to disaster. But what if we're looking at life all wrong? What if instead of a linear narrative, life is actually a mosaic, thousands of small tiles of time arranged into patterns that, when viewed as a whole, create something beautiful? This insight emerged gradually through Vanderkam's research into how people actually spend their time. After writing her book 168 Hours, she began collecting time logs from audience members at her speaking engagements, often female executives with children. Surprisingly, their lives didn't look nearly as chaotic as conventional wisdom would suggest. Despite occasional difficult moments, she saw substantial kid time, husband time, leisure, and sleep, even among women in demanding industries like consulting. Take Vanessa Chan, a consulting partner and mother of two. While she traveled extensively for work, examining her full week revealed she put her daughters to bed most nights, read them multiple chapters of Little House on the Prairie, visited their school, organized family game night, went skiing, and even designed Pinterest-worthy birthday cakes. The math is straightforward. There are 168 hours weekly. Working 50 hours and sleeping 56 leaves 62 hours for other things. Even working 60 hours leaves 52 hours. Time diary studies consistently show very few people work more than 60 hours weekly, despite claims otherwise. When we stop focusing exclusively on the difficult moments and instead see the entire mosaic of our time, a different picture emerges. In 2013, Vanderkam began seeking time logs from women who seemed to have it all, earning over $100,000 annually with at least one child under 18 at home. She recruited volunteers through her blog and professional networks, providing spreadsheets to track their time for a week. Some used detailed Word documents, others used time tracking apps like Toggle, and some modified her spreadsheet for 15-minute intervals. The Mosaic Project ultimately became a time diary study of 1,001 days in professional women's lives. Vanderkam focused on women because they're more likely to be in two career families than similarly positioned men. 85.6% of high-potential female medical researchers have spouses working full-time versus just 44.9% of men. Additionally, successful women often maintain significant involvement in family life even when they're the primary breadwinners. The $100,000 salary threshold served as an objective measure of success, though Vanderkam acknowledges this favors certain professions. Still, fewer than 4% of employed American women earn six figures, suggesting those who do have developed strategies worth studying. She collected 143 complete logs for quantitative analysis, plus dozens more for qualitative insights. Time logs provide more reliable data than simply asking people to estimate their hours, as most people don't accurately know how they spend their time. Estimates are often influenced by industry norms about 80-hour work weeks that rarely reflect reality. The study wasn't perfect. The truly overwhelmed likely couldn't participate, and many participants were familiar with Vanderkam's work. About a third came from companies where she bartered speeches for time logs. Despite these limitations, the Mosaic Project captures a more holistic picture than most studies, showing life moment by moment rather than through retrospective storytelling. One of the most surprising findings from the Mosaic Project was that successful women weren't working nearly as many hours as conventional wisdom suggests. Despite the glorification of 80-hour work weeks in certain industries, the data showed most high-earning women worked reasonable hours, often between 40-50 weekly hours, with occasional peaks during busy periods. For professionals feeling overworked, Vanderkam suggests several strategies: taking intentional breaks, using vacation days, embracing slower periods, negotiating sustainable workloads, and developing expertise that allows trading skill for reasonable hours. Quality trumps quantity. Being exceptional creates more career capital than merely being constantly available. When dealing with demanding clients or bosses, establishing boundaries is crucial. This might mean controlling resource allocation by telling difficult clients their preferred team members aren't available, or offering stars who set their own terms. Building expertise gives you leverage to negotiate better conditions, becoming so good they can't ignore you, as Cal Newport puts it. To reduce work hours, identify meetings where you add minimal value, shorten necessary meetings, try unconventional timeframes like 22.5 or 37.5 minutes, schedule challenging tasks during morning energy peaks, and perform 4 p.m. triage to determine what truly needs completion before day's end. Most importantly, be bold. Schedule evening commitments to ensure timely departures, and treat personal appointments with the same urgency as work obligations. The chapter concludes by challenging the misconception that working 50-plus hours weekly precludes family involvement. Only 9% of American mothers work more than 50 hours weekly, roughly matching women's 14% representation in top professional positions. With flexibility in scheduling and location, professionals can work 50-55-hour weeks while maintaining fulfilling personal lives. When discussing work-life integration, flexibility matters more than strict hour limits. Most women in the Mosaic Project, 75%, had schedule flexibility, using personal time during work hours for doctor appointments, school volunteering, exercise, or shopping. The flip side is that 77% also did work during personal time, early mornings, nights, and weekends. While some lament this 24/7 work culture, it's precisely this blending that enables flexibility. The ability to work at night enables the freedom to attend a child's event during traditional work hours. About 36% of college-educated Americans do some work at home, whether full-time remote arrangements or completing tasks after hours to compensate for longer lunches or school visits. Not all women choose this approach. Some maintain strict boundaries between work and home, following traditional Monday-Friday schedules without weekend work. However, most professional mothers prefer treating all Mosaic tiles as interchangeable, using strategies like 1. Split shifts, leaving work at reasonable hours, 4:30 to 6:30 p.m., to spend evenings with family, then returning to work after children's bedtime. This strategy appeared in 45% of logs, allowing even those working 65-plus weekly hours to attend children's activities consistently. 2. Remote work. Working from home one or more days weekly eliminates commute time, creating more hours for both work and family. Some participants worked remotely full-time, while others did so 1 to 2 days weekly. Rather than seeing remote work as a special accommodation requiring negotiation and sacrifice, Vanderkam suggests viewing flexibility as mutually beneficial for both employees and organizations. Modern communication technology enables effective remote collaboration while reducing real estate costs and absences. The most profound time management technique is avoiding the 24-hour trap. We often try to fit all priorities into each weekday, lamenting trade-offs during Monday through Thursday while discounting weekend time. This mindset creates unnecessary stress and feelings of inadequacy when we can't accomplish everything in a single day. By expanding our view to the full 168 hours in a week, we gain tremendous flexibility in how we allocate our time and energy. Many successful women consciously structure unbalanced days that create balance across the week. Carolyn Polk, COO of The Blaze, abandoned the conventional script that good mothers must be home for dinner every night. Instead, she crafted a schedule where she has meaningful breakfast time with her daughters while her husband handles evenings, allowing her to work later and take the 7:25 p.m. train home. On Fridays, she works from home and ends early for family activities, creating a natural transition into weekend family time. This arrangement actually provides more focused, quality time with her children than rushing home every evening in a stressed state. The consulting industry offers another compelling example of this approach. Consultants often work extremely long hours while traveling, 14, 15 hours, but compensate with shorter days and dedicated family time later in the week. Some maintain sacred weekday blocks for activities like children's sports or date nights with spouses, making up the time during intense work periods. While most Mosaic Project participants reduced work on weekends, 60% did zero work on Saturdays, 49% on Sundays, a significant minority strategically used weekend hours. About a third logged more than an hour of work on Sundays, often preparing for the week ahead or handling administrative tasks in a quieter environment. Rather than viewing weekend work negatively, it can create more balance by enabling limited schedules during weekdays. Vanderkam describes working 7 hours one Sunday while her husband took the children skiing, allowing her to make up for a snow day and prepare for another anticipated school closure. This arrangement created space for quality time later, including swimming with her daughter, followed by relaxed moments, watching cartoons, and bonding time with dad. Other professionals report using early morning weekend hours for focused work, leaving afternoons entirely free for family activities. The 168-hour perspective also reveals hidden time blocks that can be optimized. Early mornings before children wake, lunch hours, and commute time can be strategically used for different priorities throughout the week. Some parents choose to work through lunch 4 days a week to leave early on Fridays, while others use morning hours for exercise and save evenings for family dinner. The key is viewing time as fluid across the week rather than trying to achieve perfect balance every day. The mosaic of parenting contains both stressful and wonderful moments. Through studying time logs, certain strategies emerge that maximize the highs while minimizing the lows. 1. Think through your weekday evenings. Treat home life with the same intention as work. Diana Hobbs demonstrated this by planning varied evening activities with her family: walks, gardening, strawberry picking, and games, rather than falling into the mindless dinner, bath, bed routine. 2. Think through your mornings. Early rising children create opportunities for meaningful time together before the day begins. Rather than rushing immediately, parents can enjoy activities with children first, setting an alarm for when preparation must begin. 3. Play. Many parents multitask family time with housework, but intentionally playing with children, building with Legos, coloring, creating obstacle courses, is more fulfilling. Eileen Hiramura, despite her demanding job at Google, prioritized activities like coloring stained glass pictures with her children, gradually decorating their home with 60 artistic creations. 4. Share a family meal, not necessarily dinner. While family dinner is often considered sacred, research suggests its benefits may be correlative rather than causative. Breakfast can be equally valuable and often easier with young children, with less food conflict and opportunity to discuss the day ahead rather than reviewing the day past. 6. Chaperone kid excursions. Field trips offer concentrated quality time with your child while they're doing something exciting. Kimberly Jetter chaperoned her fourth grader's trip to the Colorado State Capitol, recognizing that the kids are growing quickly and soon won't want parental involvement. 7. Go one-on-one when you can. Individual attention reduces sibling rivalry and builds special connections. Parents described dates with children, like chocolate-making classes or mother-daughter book clubs. 8. Be active together. Exercise boosts mood and creates bonds. Families in the study enjoyed bike rides, paddleboarding, and skiing together. Coaching children's sports teams combines quality time with teaching resilience. 9. Plan adventures. Creating memories requires intentional planning. Melanie Nelson's family created an annual family fun list, with each family member contributing three desired activities, from exploring San Diego to visiting New Zealand. 10. Give yourself credit. With small children, you'll always be tired, so choose meaningful activities that will energize you despite fatigue. Create systems to motivate yourself toward good parenting habits, like checklists for reading with children or merit badge systems for parenting goals. The Mosaic Project logs revealed vast differences in time spent on household tasks, from 2 to 25 hours weekly. Vanderkam observed two distinct approaches: the organized camp, with rigid systems and daily rituals that paradoxically consumed more time, versus the good enough camp, who outsourced strategically and maintained a relaxed attitude. Dr. Linda Baselli exemplifies this second approach. Despite her demanding role as medical director at a homeless center treating people in traumatic situations, her time log reveals surprising calm, reading poetry, morning journaling, yoga, elliptical training, and evening guitar playing. She takes winter school delays in stride, wakes naturally without alarms some days, and manages a healthy 59 hours of sleep weekly. Her family maintains sanity through strategic choices: her husband's flexible schedule, independent children who manage their own responsibilities, consolidated activities, all children take music lessons simultaneously, and letting go of perfectionism. As Baselli wisely notes, nobody ever died of going to school in the same shirt as yesterday disease. The difference between spending 14 versus 7 hours weekly on chores equals an hour daily for career advancement or quality time with family. To escape the organization trap, successful women employ key strategies. First, if outsourcing housekeeping, do it thoroughly. Consider hiring someone who handles recurring tasks like laundry and dishes rather than just occasional deep cleaning. Second, eliminate store trips for household items by using delivery services, Amazon Prime, and online shopping. This transforms shopping from a necessity into an optional leisure activity, preserving precious weekend time. When making childcare decisions, focus on what makes daily life easier rather than harder. Many successful women choose in-home care over daycare for young children to eliminate rushed mornings and commutes. The ideal arrangement often combines convenience with quality. Some families maintain part-time daycare for social structure while using in-home care for flexibility. Don't be cheap with childcare. Unlike regular expenses, childcare is an investment in your lifelong earning potential. While costs may consume a significant portion of current income, your earnings will likely rise, while childcare costs eventually decrease as children age. Women who take 3 or more years out of the workforce lose 37% of their earning power over their remaining careers, which puts the cost of a full-time nanny in perspective. If you want to make the pieces of life fit together, build a career, raise a family, and stay sane, self-care is the secret ingredient. Though popular narratives suggest working parents are chronically sleep-deprived, Vanderkam's research tells a different story. Women in the Mosaic Project averaged 54 hours of sleep weekly, about 7 hours and 42 minutes daily. Even with demanding careers and children, 90% of participants got the recommended 7 to 9 hours of sleep daily when averaged across the week. Sleep surveys often skew perceptions by priming respondents to focus on negative experiences, asking about typical nights when most people's sleep patterns vary significantly, and ignoring weekend sleep. When tracking actual behavior through time logs, Vanderkam found weekday sleep ranging from 7.3 to 7.5 hours, with weekend sleep increasing to 8.1 to 8.6 hours. While training for the Big Sur International Marathon in 2010, Vanderkam discovered something crucial about exercise. It's not about time, but choice. The data from the Mosaic Project confirms this. Of the 135 detailed time logs, 91% showed some physical activity, averaging 3.3 hours weekly, exceeding the CDC's recommended 2.5 hours. Remarkably, 33 logs featured 5-plus hours of weekly exercise. Unlike sleep, exercise wasn't inversely correlated with work hours. Even more telling, exercise and number of children were positively correlated. People with larger families actually exercised more than those with smaller ones. the most successful exercisers use strategies like functional fitness, biking to work, morning workouts when willpower is highest, exercising with children, or using lunch breaks. The key insight? Don't look for perfect daily exercise times, but instead find different opportunities throughout your 168-hour week. Even someone training for the Boston Marathon only needed about 10 hours weekly for exercise, less time than the average American spends watching TV in 3 days. Many of us cling to the narrative that we have no leisure time at all. When sociologist John Robinson claimed mothers had around 30 hours of leisure weekly, Dr. Phil viewers were offended by the suggestion. Ironically, watching Dr. Phil itself is a leisure activity. The Mosaic Project women all had leisure time. They watched TV, read books, attended parties, and enjoyed hobbies. While they didn't watch as much TV as average Americans, 4.4 hours weekly versus 9.7 to 13 hours for typical working mothers, they still made time for pleasure. Making leisure happen requires managing both demand and supply. You need compelling activities that make you ignore your inbox, plus available time. Without knowing what you want to do with leisure time, you'll fritter it away mindlessly. Time is elastic. It stretches to accommodate what we need or want, as demonstrated by a financial planner who found 7 hours in her week to deal with an exploded water heater. Even 5 minutes of daily reading adds up to 35 minutes weekly. Smart leisure seekers find activities they can dip in and out of quickly, like crossword puzzles or crocheting. The busiest people can find chunks of leisure time by making conscious choices not to waste them on random email checks or social media puttering. You can build leisure into your workday. People already engage in vast quantities of leisure at work. That's why BuzzFeed is so popular. Rather than mindlessly browsing the internet, meet a friend for lunch, take a walk, or enjoy tea time. Extending childcare by an hour or two weekly creates space for personal pursuits. Adults benefit from their own extracurricular activities. One woman took guitar lessons, while another found that mosaic-making classes provided a wonderful escape that made her happier and more creative at work. Weekends are critical for leisure, with 36 waking hours between Friday evening and Monday morning. Planning 3 to 5 fun adult activities per weekend creates the right balance between wasted time and overscheduling. The best approach is simply to claim leisure time. Let dishes sit while you read on the porch. Prioritize that art project despite your inbox. You can build leisure into your workday. People already engage in vast quantities of leisure at work. That's why BuzzFeed is so popular. Rather than mindlessly browsing the internet, meet a friend for lunch, take a walk, or enjoy tea time. Extending childcare by an hour or two weekly creates space for personal pursuits. Adults benefit from their own extracurricular activities. One woman took guitar lessons, while another found that mosaic-making classes provided a wonderful escape that made her happier and more creative at work. Weekends are critical for leisure, with 36 waking hours between Friday evening and Monday morning. Planning 3 to 5 fun adult activities per weekend creates the right balance between wasted time and overscheduling. The best approach is simply to claim leisure time. Let dishes sit while you read on the porch. Prioritize that art project despite your inbox. Life is lived in hours, and proper time stewardship creates a mosaic containing more joy than most people think possible. Advanced time management strategies transform small clusters of minutes into something brilliant and fun. People live in chaos because they can't estimate how long things take. Organizations waste nearly 11% of project dollars due to poor estimates. Good estimators embrace their inner pessimist, think like chefs working backward from deadlines, and follow the 100% rule by accounting for all steps in a process. Beyond carpooling with colleagues or friends, commuting offers numerous opportunities for productivity and personal growth. Car schooling transforms drive time into educational opportunities through audiobooks, language learning, or great courses lectures. Active commuting, walking, biking, incorporates exercise into your day. While multitasking is generally inefficient, it can increase happiness when combining enjoyable activities with mundane tasks. Talking with loved ones while folding laundry or ironing makes chores more pleasant. The best multitasking combines activities using different parts of your brain. Studies show doodling or knitting can actually improve attention and information retention during meetings. Time management masters excel at using unexpected free time productively or joyfully. Real estate agent Jennifer Hodgins books massages whenever clients cancel appointments. Rather than defaulting to email checking and small time fragments, these moments can bring joy and meaning through quick quality time with children, working on your list of 100 dreams, listening to favorite songs, or writing notes or journal entries. The most powerful time management strategy is seeing each moment in context. Any difficult period is fleeting, and life looks different across minutes, days, or years. This ability to see all the tiles in life's mosaic is exemplified by Emma Johnson, whose life transformed after her husband suffered a severe head injury and they later divorced. Rather than fixating on life's dark tiles, Johnson rebuilt her career efficiently, packing well-paying work into compressed hours to support her children while building her wealthy single mommy brand. She balances work, parenting, and an active social life by being grateful for calm moments and taking hectic ones in stride. When all life's tiles are arranged into a compelling mosaic of work, family, and personal time, life becomes not just manageable, but fulfilling. The berry season is short. Let's fill it with all possible joy.